are descended through their fathers. He, too, was a stone-cold fox. But getting back to fruits and vegetables, here's what we know. In 780,000 BCE, figs, olives, and pears are being eaten. This predates even the evolution of anatomically modern humans. In 40,000 BCE, dates, legumes, and barley are being enjoyed. In 30,000 BCE, apples, oranges, and wild berries are being consumed. And in 10,500 BCE, farming is invented, and selective breeding of plants and animals begins. Luckily for you, you'll find edible fruits and vegetables in any era humans existed, because if there weren't any, then humans would have died out, and we'd have never have lasted long enough to take the very fabric of time and space and tear a hole in it big enough to shove an FC-3000 through. The bad news is, these edible plants, leafy greens, and vegetables are likely to be different from the ones you're familiar with, and they will almost certainly be worse. As we have seen, selective breeding made plants better from a human perspective, higher yields, bigger fruits, hardier breeds, and so on, which necessarily means that the further you go back in time, the worse fruits and vegetables you're going to find. Smaller yields, more disgusting flavors, worse harvests, inconvenient packaging, all these frustrations and more await you in your future, by which, of course, we mean the distant past. Remember the early ancestors of corn, peaches, and watermelons that we saw in the previous section? Well, if you ever want to eat watermelon and peach fruit salad with corn on the side again, then you're going to have to selectively breed these plants yourself. You won't find a decent head of corn before 900 CE, which is too bad because a single kernel of modern corn has more nutritional value than an entire ear of its early ancestor. You won't find orange carrots before 1600 CE. Every avocado you probably ever eaten derives from a seed found under mysterious circumstances in 1926. Footnote, this is the Hass avocado, which produces fruit year-round that are larger, tastier, and last longer before spoiling than other avocados. The eponymous Hass bought the seed from a Mr. Rideout, a man who took seeds from wherever he could, including restaurant scraps. Hass planted the avocado seed, intending to use the random plant only as a base upon which he could graft seedlings of other, more popular avocado breeds. After two grafting attempts failed, Hass was going to cut down the now useless tree, but he was convinced to let it stand by Mr. Calkins, who believed the young tree was strong. It soon afterwards began producing the fruit enjoyed worldwide today. The seed may have been a cross-pollination, or it may just have been a rare evolutionary leap forward, but all Hass avocados today are grown from the grafted seedlings derived from that original tree. Without the coincidence of a Mr. Hass, a Mr. Rideout, and a Mr. Calkins in your timeline, or their equivalents, you will not have this avocado. End of footnote. Beyond the avocado, the red grapefruit you're familiar with didn't exist before government-sponsored radiation experiments performed in the 1950s. Footnote. The red grapefruit eaten today is a product of a 1950s program in the United States called Atoms for Peace, whose goal was to produce practical uses for nuclear power outside of a wartime context. One of the things Atoms for Peace came up with was the Gamma Garden, which is exactly as amazing as it sounds. Radioactive material was put in the middle of a garden around which concentric rings of plants were planted. The plants closest died of radiation poisoning. The plants farthest away were largely unaffected, but the plants in the middle mutated. Some of those mutations were useful, and among them was the modern red grapefruit, a sweeter, atomically induced mutation of the existing red grapefruit, whose flesh often faded to a less desirable pink. Most red grapefruit today comes from the descendants of those atomically mutated plants. End of footnote. However, you will find you have the distinct advantage of knowing that you can coax these plants you remember into existence through selective breeding, and that what you want to do is possible, achievable, and totally worth it. But before you can do any of that, you'll need to forage for plants and animals, both to eat and to start farms with, and you'll probably encounter potential foods that both you and humans native to this era aren't familiar with. How can you tell if they're safe to eat? A bad answer is eat a bunch and see if you die. A better answer is eat just a little bit and see if you die, but the best answer is read this section and then remember what you read, because there's actually a way to eat strange foods relatively safely. First off, there aren't any mammals whose flesh is naturally poisonous, so they're generally safe to eat, food allergies aside, but if you're dining on platypus, maybe don't go to town on the venom sac. Footnote, it won't kill you, but it does cause excruciating pain that can last for months and cause stiffness that lasts for years, and it doesn't even taste that good. Don't waste your time. End of footnote. There are no birds with naturally poisonous flesh either, but there are a handful of them, like quail and the African spur-winged goose, whose flesh, skin, or even feathers can, on the right diet, become poisonous. These birds can eat plants and animals toxic to humans and then incorporate those toxins into their bodies, so don't gobble all birds willy-nilly. Footnote, in rare circumstances, this can also happen to mammals. See Section 9 for an example of polar bear livers becoming toxic. End footnote. It gets even dodgier when you move on to eating snakes, reptiles, fish, spiders, and dinosaurs, all of which have naturally venomous species. In fact, all spiders are technically venomous, but only a few have venom strong enough to kill you. Plants are an even greater toxic threat than animals. Since plants can't move like animals to escape predators, they've evolved several defensive strategies, many of them operating on the principle of, I'll make whoever is eating me so sick that they never bother me again, but on second thought, why take the risk? Better to just kill them the first time. Some plant toxins are irrelevant. Apple seeds contain cyanide, but you'd have to eat tons of them to be affected, while others are brutally horrible. Among the worst is the Australian stinging bush, also known as the suicide plant, after stories of both humans and animals killing themselves to escape the pain it produces. When you touch this plant, the neurotoxin-coated hollow hairs covering it pierce your skin, causing an unbearable pain described as similar to being burnt with acid and electrocuted at the same time. And the only treatment is to soak the affected area of your body in hydrochloric acid and then remove the plant hairs with tweezers. And carefully, because if they break off inside the skin, that only increases the pain. Civilization pro tip, even the plants in Australia want to kill you. Needless to say, you'll want to stay away from any plants 1 to 3 meters tall, with hairy, heart-shaped leaves ranging from 12 to 22 centimeters long that you find in Australia. Luckily, you can put any food, whether plant or animal, to the universal edibility test described in the sidebar coming up. Before submitting any new food to this test, make sure to have lots of water nearby, fresh and salted, and some charcoal, section 10.1.1. The fresh water is for drinking and to clean affected areas of your skin, lips, or tongue if something bad happens. The salt water is to induce vomiting if something bad happens inside you, and a teaspoon of charcoal can be mixed with the water to produce a paste that will either induce vomiting when swallowed or, if you can keep it down, help absorb toxins. Bon appétit. Sidebar, the universal edibility test. Test each part of a potential food separately. Seeds, stems, leaves, buds, fruits, etc., and in the same state you intend to eat it in, raw or cooked. Cooked food is always safer. Don't eat for 8 hours before each test, and remember that testing just a single part of a single potential food will take the better part of an entire day. To save yourself from wasting time eating poisons, remember that bright colors are usually, but not always, used in nature to mean I'm easily seen, which means I'm not worried about predators, which means if you eat me, you're probably going to have a bad time. Footnote, if an animal has bright colors to warn of its toxicity, and that warning works, then there's an evolutionary incentive for other non-toxic animals to copy that coloring to stop predators from eating them too. This strategy generally works as long as the actually toxic animals outnumber the ones faking it. End footnote. Part 1 of the Universal Edibility Test. Smell the food. A strong, unpleasant smell is usually a bad sign. Don't eat it if it smells rotten, because it probably is. And if your food smells like almonds but is not, in fact, almonds, it might contain cyanide. Step 2. The skin inside your elbow or wrist is sensitive. Gently rub a piece of the food there and wait 15 minutes. If your skin burns, itches, goes numb, or reacts in any way, don't eat it. Step 3. If nothing bad happens, briefly touch the food to the corner of your mouth, then wait 15 minutes. Step 4. If nothing bad happens, briefly touch it to your lip and tongue, and then wait another 15 minutes. Step 5. If nothing bad happens, place a piece on your tongue and wait with it in your mouth for, you guessed it, 15 minutes. Step 6. If nothing bad happens, chew once, but don't swallow. Hold it in your mouth for 15 minutes. Step 7. If nothing bad happens, swallow the piece you chewed 15 minutes ago and consume nothing but water for the next 8 hours. Step 8. If nothing bad happens, eat a small handful of the food and wait another 8 hours. Step 9. If you've gotten this far without any reaction, the food is probably safe to eat. you can add it to your diet slowly over the next week. This whole process takes 17 and a half hours, and you can't eat anything else during the test, but it is a viable way to experiment with new foods and also not die. And while it's not perfect, a rash from poison ivy, for example, can sometimes take days to manifest, it does limit your exposure. Chapter 7. Putting Down Roots, Useful Plants for the Stranded Time Traveler. A taste for these plants is definitely worth cultivating. The following is a list of plants that have been most useful to humanity, as well as the things you can do with them. Plants predate humanity, and their natural evolution generally proceeds slowly, which means that in any time where you can find humans, you will also find plants that match or approximate the entries on this list. It is important to note, however, that the plants you encounter may be slightly different, or in some cases markedly different, from the kinds you are familiar with. For more information on why this is and how you can recover the plants you're familiar with from their weird ancestors you're seeing, see Section 5. Examine the following pages to find the most useful plants native to your region. Plants are listed alphabetically, and each includes the area they first evolved in. If you don't know what region of the planet you're on, you can try to find some plants you recognize around you, and then locate them in these pages. In the unlikely event you don't know what any of these plants look like, at the very least you'll know what sort of things you can expect out there, and while entire books have been written about each of these plants, a few sentences about each species is technically better than nothing. Depending on your time period, you may get lucky and find instances of these plants outside their native ranges. Endnote. If you're interested in plants, check out 50 Plants That Changed the Course of History by Bill Laws and 50 Foods That Changed the Course of History by Bill Price. More information about the plants in this book, along with many others, can be found in these two texts. If this book wasn't an artifact from an alternate future timeline, you might even suspect that I used them as valuable references when writing this section. Weird. End note. 7.1. Apples. Origin, Central Asia. Uses. The apple tree was among the first trees cultivated, and its fruit has been improved for thousands of years, so if you're back before selective breeding was invented, expect some disappointing and tiny sour apples consisting mostly of seeds and a core. Enjoy! Apples picked in fall and stored in a cool place keep well over winter. Notes. Apple cider can be made by leaving out apple juice and allowing natural yeast to ferment it. It might not be delicious, but it will be alcoholic. 7.2. Bamboo. Origin. Warm, moist, tropical regions. Uses. For a long-lasting writing surface, especially useful before paper, scrape off the outer green skin, split them open on one side, and flatten them. Multiple shoots can be joined together. Bamboo is great for flutes, also blowguns, plus the shoots are edible. Bamboo can be used to construct arrows, baskets, scaffolding, furniture, walls, flooring, electric light filaments, water pipes, and as a reinforcing agent in concrete if steel is not invented yet, since bamboo has a tensile strength, which is the ability to withstand heavy loads without snapping or being pulled apart, that's almost as good as steel. Bamboo also attracts adorable giant pandas. Notes. Bamboo is an incredibly versatile plant, and if you're stranded in an area of the planet where it grows, you will have a lot of what you need for civilization from this one plant alone. Bamboo is one of the fastest growing plants in the world, and that's useful if you want plants like yesterday. 7.3. Barley. Origin. Temperate regions worldwide. Uses. Humans eat it. Animals eat it too. This is an essential crop available over most of the world. Notes. Barley beer is among the first alcoholic drinks ever made by humans. To find out how to make your own beer, see section 10.2.5. Footnote. Mead and wine predate beer because you can make both of those by accident. For mead, just dilute honey, section 8.8, in water, and it'll start to ferment when it's colonized by yeast. If you don't want to rely on wild yeast, section 10.2.5 has instructions on how to farm your own. An alcohol occurs naturally in rotting fruit, which is the same process, but under human control, used to make wine. End footnote. One of the oldest extant recipes is for a barley beer, and you know we're going to give it to you. There's a sidebar at the end of this section. Cheers. 7.4, black pepper. Origin, Southern Asia and Southeast Asia. Uses. Harvest the red fruits of the pepper vine and let them dry in the sun, and you'll have black peppercorns that you can then grind into your food for that spicy, peppery flavor. Black pepper is a ubiquitous spice in the modern era, and it remains the world's most traded spice. Notes. In medieval Europe, pepper was worth 10 times more than any other spice. People either love this stuff or hate bland food. Maybe both? Probably it's both. Pepper was also thought to cure constipation, insomnia, sunburn, and toothaches, as well as other diseases. It doesn't, so don't waste your time. Section 7.5, cacao plant. Origin, rainforests of Central and South America. Uses, chocolate is delicious, and the cacao bean is where it comes from. Scoop the beans from the pods, let them ferment beneath banana leaves, then dry them in the sun, roast them, and remove the shell. Grind what's left, and you've got pure chocolate. Naturally bitter, for centuries chocolate was roasted, ground, and then added to stews or wine, but chocolate really took off in Europe when paired with sugar and made into a delicious beverage. Notes. The pulp from the bean pods can also be eaten, or, like any sweet fruit, fermented, and it was the pulp, rather than the beans, for which the plant was originally cultivated. End note. Most researchers suspect this was the case, but I don't see a way to prove it without time machines. End note. Chocolate is one of the most sought-after flavors in the world, so get ready for your civilization to be pretty popular. The most universally agreed upon to be delicious chocolate form is milk chocolate, which you can produce by adding milk, sugar, and fats to your chocolate over heat, then allowing it to cool. Milk chocolate keeps well and is high in calories, making it a useful food on long voyages. See section 10.12.5, boats. 7.6, chili pepper. Origin, Central and South America. Uses, good for making food spicier and, therefore, more delicious. Also, extremely useful in making chili. The active component is called capsaicin and can be used in very light concentrations for temporary pain relief. It works by overloading pain receptors. Notes, capsaicin is the second most widely consumed condiment after salt. People love this stuff. 7.7, cinchona. Origin, Bolivia, Peru. Uses, the bark of this tree contains quinine, and guess what? Quinine is a treatment for malaria. Notes, to fight malaria, strip the bark from the tree, dry it, powder it, and gobble it. Side effects include headaches, trouble seeing, ringing in the ears or deafness, and an irregular heartbeat, so don't eat quinine unless you need it. 7.8, coconut. Origin, Indo-Pacific regions. Uses, an extremely versatile plant. Its fronds can be used for fuel, baskets and mats can be woven from its leaves, its stalks can form brooms, the hair from the coconut shell can be woven into rope, and of course, coconut flesh is extremely delicious. Notes, coconuts are airtight, which means the water they contain is actually germ and bacteria free. They're a great source of safe and clean drinking water, and one that doesn't require any technology to produce. You might even say they're coconuts, but you won't, because you're too busy being stranded in the past to make puns right now. 7.9, coffee. Origin, Africa. Uses, dry the beans, grind them up, and run water through them to produce a black liquid that a lot of people like to drink for some reason. Unrelatedly, coffee is high in caffeine, which is the world's most consumed psychoactive drug. Notes, caffeine prevents the symptoms of drowsiness and stimulates parts of the central nervous system. You can overdose and die from consuming too much caffeine, so maybe take it easy with the coffee there, champ. 7.10, corn. Origin, the Americas. Uses, a staple crop of American civilization, corn is a convenient and efficient way to feed both humans and animals. Everyone loves corn. Or at least, everyone will eat it when there are no other options. An extremely versatile vegetable, corn can be boiled, baked, steamed, eaten raw, crushed into corn powder, heated to make popcorn, baked into bread, or brewed into beer. Notes, domesticated corn, available after around 7000 BCE, does not naturally reproduce. To produce more corn, you must conserve kernels until next spring, then bury them in the ground. It's been so thoroughly domesticated that it can no longer survive without human aid and interference. Thanks for the trust, corn. 7.11. Cotton. Origin, the Americas, Africa, and India. Uses. Even in the modern era, it's one of the most important non-food crops in the world. Cotton can be used to make soft, breathable clothing and textiles, along with sails and fishing nets for boats, paper, coffee filters, tents, and even fire hoses. Cotton fiber is very high in cellulose, which makes it great for papermaking. See section 10.11.1. Notes. To make cotton yarn, which can then be woven into fabric, first pick the fluffy balls off the tops of cotton flowers. Pull them across a rough board to separate the seeds from the lint. The lint can then be combed to straighten out its fibers and spun into yarn. See section 10.8.4 for more. 7.12. Eucalyptus. Origin, Australia. Uses. Bark resins can be used to produce mouthwash. The flowers attract honeybees that make delicious honey. The leaves produce oil that's actually surprisingly useful in medicine. Allow your eyes to drift over to the notes section for details. Also, eucalyptus oil can be used to make food taste deliciously spicy and can be added to soaps as a perfume. Notes. Eucalyptus oil, applied topically, is an antiseptic and anti-inflammatory, applied to wounds to help prevent infection. Swallowed helps relieve cold and flu symptoms such as sore throat. Inhaled as a vapor is a decongestant and treatment for bronchitis. Applied to skin also works as an insect repellent. Thanks, eucalyptus oil, you're super useful. But it's also extremely flammable, so much so that burning eucalyptus trees sometimes explode, so be careful with that. And it also can be toxic if too much is consumed. A lethal dose is in the range of 0.05 milliliters to 0.5 milliliters per kilogram of body mass. 7.13. Grapes. Origin, Western Asia. Uses. The fruit can be eaten raw, sun-dried to produce raisins, which keep for longer, or fermented to produce wine, which humans, historically, have enjoyed getting pretty buzzed on. While grapes will ferment on their own, the art of the winemaker is to stabilize the drink after fermentation stops, preserving it at the right moment to produce a more delicious beverage. Notes. If you're around when steam travel is beginning between Europe and America, be aware that the unprecedented speed of these ships will allow pale yellow American phylloxera insects, all of whom used to perish on the previous longer oceanic crossings, to survive the voyage. When these insects arrive in Europe, they will become an epidemic, destroying vineyards there for generations. The eventual solution will be to graft European grape plants onto the rootstock of phylloxera-resistant American grape species. The sooner you come up with this, the more you will alter the history of the world, or at least the wine-drinking parts of it. 7.14. Oak trees. Origin, Northern Hemisphere. Uses. Oak is a very dense, strong, but flexible hardwood, resistant to insects and fungus. Everything from boats to buildings can be made from oak. Oak bark also contains tannins, chemicals that let you turn gross animal skin into a flexible, wearable leather. See section 10.8.3 for instructions. Notes. Oak trees can live for more than 1,500 years, and it takes about 150 years for an oak tree to grow to the point where it can be harvested for wood. So oak farming is a situation in which you'll want to plan ahead. 7.15. Opium poppy. Origin, Eastern Mediterranean. Uses. A pretty plant that also happens to produce a sap from its seed head that contains opium, the source of morphine, a painkiller, codeine, another painkiller also used to treat coughs and diarrhea, and heroin, a highly addictive narcotic. If you're not interested in drugs, poppy seeds can also be used as a tasty spice. Notes. Harvest opium by scoring the surface of a ripening poppy head in the evening, collecting the sap that oozes out in the morning. Let it dry in the sun and you've got raw opium. Morphine can be extracted from poppies by cutting up the dried plants and boiling them in three times their weight of hot water until a paste forms at the bottom. Add lime, appendix C.3, repeat the process, and then add ammonium chloride, appendix C.6, to precipitate out morphine, which is then purified by hydrochloric acid, appendix C.13. 7.16. Papyrus. Origin, Egypt, tropical Africa. Uses, a great thing to write on before you've either invented paper or discovered that if you dry and stretch animal skins, you can make parchment to write on instead. Notes, make papyrus paper by peeling away the outer layer of papyrus stalks, then cutting them into long strips. Let them soak in water for a few days. Align them side by side, edges slightly overlapping, then put another layer on top, perpendicular to the first. Press them flat for a few days, and ta-da! You produce a single sheet of papyrus paper. Section 7.17, Potato. Origin, the Andes in South America. Uses, potatoes are one of the few plants that contain all the nutrition humans need. You can live entirely off potatoes, but shouldn't, because then you're extremely vulnerable to crop failure. All parts of the potato are poisonous until cooked, so don't eat raw potatoes. Their poison actually gives you a slight advantage. Humans are the only animals that cook their food, so animals that also find potatoes toxic won't steal them from your fields. Footnote, well, we're just about the only animals that cook our food. A bonobo named Kanzi was taught to cook by human researchers and in the early 2000 CE had advanced the level of collecting his own sticks to make a woodpile, which he would then light with matches provided by humans. He's used fire to cook marshmallows. Similarly, in 2015 CE, chimpanzees were provided with a cooking machine, really a bowl with a false bottom, that when food was placed into it would eject an already cooked version of the same, sidestepping the need to control fire. And these chimpanzees showed a preference for cooked foods over raw, even saving food in order to cook it later. End footnote. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew, even cook them in oil to make delicious fries and potato chips, which are not healthy, but which are extremely delicious, and listen, sometimes civilization just wants a bunch of chips for dinner, okay? Potato chips don't normally get invented until the 1800 CE, but they're so easy to make that you might as well enjoy them right now. Notes. Potatoes can be grown almost anywhere except the tropics, and they provide more calories per square kilometer than any other cereal crop. Historically, there was European resistance to the potato. Protestants thought they were an evil thing from the New World that multiplied underground and whose curvaceous shape was suggestive. Yes, if you can trace your ancestry back to the early days of the United States, there's a fair chance your ancestors were turned on by potatoes. This resistance was overcome in many ways, most notably in France, where potatoes were planted on the grounds of the Palace of Versailles, where guards were placed to protect this new and mysterious royal vegetable. At night, the guards would retire, and citizens, curious about this new crop, would raid the fields, soon growing potatoes themselves. Section 7.18, Rice. Origin, Asia and Africa. Uses, rice has been continuously cultivated for tens of thousands of years, so billions of humans have found it both convenient and tasty. Try it with a curry on top. Delicious. A staple crop for Asian civilizations. Notes. More than one-fifth of the calories consumed worldwide by humans comes from rice, more than any other plant. Rice grows best in wet soils, so areas with high rainfall work great, but it can be cultivated to grow almost anywhere as long as you water it. Rice can be grown in a flooded field, which has the benefit of both deterring vermin and preventing weeds that can't survive flooding from growing. 7.19, Rubber Plant. Origin. Different species of rubber trees are native to South America. Uses. The sap from rubber trees is a flexible, sticky, and waterproof latex that has many uses. Making erasers, from which we get the term rubber for rubbing out mistakes. Pressing into sheets to make waterproof clothing, as an adhesive or cement, or as an insulator when dealing with electrical currents, see section 10.6.1. Notes. Natural rubber decays, but it can be transformed into a less sticky, more flexible, and longer-lasting material through chemistry. This process is called vulcanization, and while you can, of course, call it whatever you want, vulcanization already sounds pretty sweet. The easiest way to vulcanize rubber is to add sulfur to it while it's being heated. If you don't have pure sulfur lying around, great news! The South American rubber plant is typically found with another plant climbing on it, a vine with large, fragrant, night-blooming white flowers. The juices from these moonflower plants contain sulfur. You've got all the ingredients you need to make vulcanized rubber side by side. 7.20, soybean. Origin, East Asia. Uses. Soybean plants produce 2 times as much protein per square kilometer as other vegetables, 5 to 10 times more than land used for grazing animals to make milk, and 15 times more than land set aside for meat production. You like protein? You came to the right place. Soybeans are also a great source of many essential nutrients. Notes. Like yams, soybeans are toxic to humans and all other animals with just one stomach when raw and need to be cooked before being eaten. Listen, you should be cooking a lot of the mysterious foods you find anyway. Plenty of foods have toxins that get destroyed by cooking, and no foods become toxic when cooked. Cooking, it's great. 7.21, sugarcane. Origin, New Guinea. Uses. The juice pressed from sugarcane plants can be boiled down to a density at which table sugar crystallizes out. While not necessary for civilization, sugar does make life sweeter, and also contributes to diabetes and obesity, and makes it harder for your body to process fiber, so maybe go easy on the sugar. If you're not in the tropics where sugarcane grows, you may be in temperate climates where sugar beets are found. Shred the plant and then boil it for hours to extract the sugars. The resulting liquid can then itself be boiled down to produce a thick molasses. Notes. The dried pulp left over from sugarcane sugar extraction can be used to make paper. Sugarcane is one of the most efficient photosynthesizing plants. It converts more sunlight into biomass than just about any other plant. This means that if you want to use plants as a fuel source, you'll get the best and most productive use of your land by growing sugarcane, drying it out, and then burning it to boil water, which can then be used in your steam engine, see section 10.5.4. You can even burn the dried pulp left over from producing sugar, making sugarcane even more efficient. 7.22, sweet orange. Origin, China and Southeast Asia. Uses, contains tons of vitamin C and comes conveniently wrapped for transit. Notes, humans require vitamin C but cannot produce it on their own. So eat an orange if you don't want scurvy, or if you already have it, because it's also a cure. Most fresh foods contain vitamin C, but the vitamin breaks down when exposed to light, heat, and air, so most preserved foods don't contain any at all. Section 9, Basic Nutrition, shows how knowing this simple fact will save thousands, if not millions, of lives. The sweet orange was not bred until the 1400 CE, so before then, expect some very bitter oranges. 7.23, tea. Origin, China, Japan, India, and Russia. Uses, put the dried leaves in hot water, and it's delicious. Also, it's a source of caffeine, which can be valuable if you haven't been to Africa yet to discover coffee. Notes, tea is the second most widely consumed drink in the world. Only water is more popular. So, yeah, it's pretty tasty. Tea can be made from other plants too, but these are usually called herbal teas. Proper tea comes from the tea plant, and you should accept no substitutes. Try with milk and sugar, or iced with lemon. 7.24, tobacco. Origin, Central America. Uses, contains nicotine, a stimulant. You can smoke it if you want to become addicted to a plant. Notes, in the 20th century CE, tobacco was the leading cause of preventable death, and 1 in every 10 people who died worldwide died because of tobacco use. Even secondhand exposure can be fatal, so don't smoke it or be around people who do. Avoid introducing tobacco to your civilization, and you will save yourself billions of dollars, millions of lives, and prevent the invention of vaping. 7.25, wheat. Origin, Middle East in the Fertile Crescent. Uses, this is a staple crop for European civilizations. Ground wheat, which is what it sounds like, wheat pulverized into powder by grinding it between two rocks, see section 10.5.1, mixed with water and given a little heat, produces flatbread and biscuits that will last quite a while before rotting. You can use wheat to make ale too, see section 10.2.5. Dried wheat stores well and will still grow wheat plants next spring. To separate the grain from the plants, just lay cut plants on the ground and hit them with sticks. This causes the grain to separate. Next, to separate the wheat from the chaff, i.e. the grains from the empty husks, just throw your grains into the wind. The chaff and straw will be carried away while the denser wheat falls down. Pre-domesticated wild wheat had an important feature that was soon bred away. The seed heads would open to scatter their seeds on the ground or in the wind. Humans naturally preferred to collect wheat with closed pods, since then the seeds weren't lost, and this quickly led to domesticated wheat, which keeps its seed heads closed. These closed seed heads mean that domesticated wheat is now unable to survive without humans to plant it. Notes. Wheat is grown on more land than any other food and is the most popular vegetable source of protein. Bread is a staple food that's both simple and nutritious and has been consumed for tens of thousands of years, so it's no surprise it's inspired several sayings. Depriving someone by taking the bread out of their mouth, being savvy and knowing which side your bread is buttered on, and the idea that we can't live on bread alone, and things being the greatest thing since sliced bread. Sliced bread, incidentally, was first commercially available on July 7th, 1928 CE. Before then, you had to slice bread yourself, all the while whispering, the greatest thing ever would be not to have to do this anymore. You can invent fans if you don't want to rely on windy days when separating wheat from chaff. Combine an electric motor, section 10.6.2, with a propeller, section 10.12.6. Domestication of wheat can be achieved in as little as 20 years. Endnote. Okay, this one I can verify. Experiments in domesticating wheat from wild ancestors have been done in our timeline and achieved similar results. And endnote. 7.26. White mulberry. Origin, China. Uses. This plant is the preferred food for silkworms, see section 8.15, which produce silk. Notes. For more than 1,000 years, the Chinese traded silk while also keeping the knowledge of how it was produced completely secret from the rest of the world, ensuring they'd have a monopoly on this extremely lucrative product. The fact that anyone who exported silkworms or their eggs was condemned to death probably helped. Theories of where silk came from included the petals of a rare flower, the leaves of a special tree, or even an insect that would eat until it exploded, sending silk everywhere. These theories were sadly incorrect. Silk comes from the cocoons of silkworms and can be harvested by simply taking the cocoons off a white mulberry tree, but if you want to produce it on a larger scale, you'll want to farm the silkworms yourself. Section 10.8.4 has complete instructions. 7.27, white willow. Origin, Europe and Asia. Uses. The leaves and bark contain salicin, which metabolizes into salicylic acid in the body when eaten. Salicylic acid is a primary ingredient in aspirin, which is one of the most commonly used drugs in the world, and one you'll want to have access to. You can use willow to make baskets, fishing nets, fences, and walls. Humans have been using willow to make things for a really long time. Willow nets date back to 8300 BCE. Notes. Aspirin can treat the symptoms of fever, reduce inflammation, and provide temporary pain relief. Like sugarcane, willow is a good source of biomass for fuel. Willow, like ash, is a tree that really wants to grow. So much so, in fact, that it's possible to cut down a willow and not kill it. This is done through coppicing, a process in which you cut down the tree in winter, when it's dormant, but leave the stump. In spring, the tree will use the same root system to regrow, and it can be reharvested by undergoing coppicing again in 2 to 5 years. Regularly coppiced trees remain at their juvenile stage and therefore don't die of old age, which makes them a renewable source of wood fuel. Other trees can be coppiced too, but willows are particularly well suited due to their growth speed. 7.28, wild cabbage. Origin, Mediterranean and Adriatic coasts. Uses, can be selectively bred into kale, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, and more. All are descended from the same ancestor, making this plant very versatile for selective breeding. Notes. Cabbages grow readily in most climates and soil types, so they are an easy source of calories. 7.29. Yam. Origin. Africa and Asia. Uses. A starchy vegetable rich in minerals, carbohydrates, and vitamins, though lacking in protein. Notes. This is distinct from the sweet potato found in America, also called yams, because humans just love being confusing. Many yams, especially those that haven't been domesticated, are toxic. The toxins are destroyed by boiling, baking, or roasting the yams, so be sure not to eat them raw. Plus, they're better when they're roasted. You've got to try them. Sidebar. It's time for some beer. One of the oldest naturally extant recipes, i.e. one that reached the present via ancient Sumerian clay tablets from around 1800 BCE, rather than being brought here by time travelers, is a recipe for barley beer. Well, technically it's a hymn proclaiming the charms of one of the Sumerian gods, Ninkasi, but it actually spends most of its time describing how to make beer instead. It's as if the Christian Lord's Prayer read, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, including pizza, which is a flatbread topped with cheese, if thy pizza be plain, and with vegetables for thy vegetarians, or with meat, if thou hast put meat lovers amongst us, all of which can be prepared in thy name as follows." If you are in a religious society and wanted information to be preserved and shared for as long as possible, wrapping it in the cloak of a prayer or hymn could easily do the trick. Footnote, this is not necessarily as crazy as it sounds. In Catholicism, the ceremony of Mass requires wine, which has meant that as long as there have been Catholics, there have also been monasteries working to ensure that wine is always available for these services, while also, incidentally, ensuring that the viticultural techniques required to produce this beverage are not lost. In the Middle Ages, Catholic monastic orders, including Cistercians, Carthusians, Templars, and Benedictine monks, were among the largest producers of wine in France and Germany, and several wines they introduced are still enjoyed today. Dom Pérignon, for example, is named after the Benedictine monk who advanced the fermentation of this sparkling wine in the late 1600s in a French province named Champagne. End of footnote. Here's an excerpt from that hymn to Ninkasi, translated from ancient Sumerian, that contains this ancient beer recipe. End note. This tablet survived to our modern era too, though with some damage. Specifically, the verse about the great sweet wort is missing its last two lines, but thanks to the repetitive nature of the hymn, it's pretty easy to guess what they are. Interestingly, this translation of the hymn is identical to the one found in M. Civil's A Hymn to the Beer Goddess paper, which is either a fantastic coincidence, evidence that this M. Civil is somehow a constant across timelines, or just proof that there are only so many ways to translate ancient Sumerian beer recipes into English. End note. Your father is Enki, Lord Nidimid. Your mother is Ninti, the queen of the sacred lake. Ninkasi, your father is Enki, Lord Nidimid. Your mother is Ninti, the queen of the sacred lake. You are the one who handles the dough and with a big shovel, mixing in a pit, the bapir, which is a Sumerian unleavened barley bread, with sweet aromatics. Ninkasi, you are the one who handles the dough and with a big shovel, mixing in a pit, the bapir with the date honey. You are the one who bakes the bapir in the big oven, puts in order the piles of hulled grains. Ninkasi, you are the one who bakes the bapir in the big oven, puts in order the piles of hulled grains. You are the one who waters the malt set on the ground. The noble dogs keep away even the potentates, which are autocratic rulers like queens or kings. Ninkasi, you are the one who waters the malt set on the ground. The noble dogs keep away even the potentates. You are the one who soaks the malt in a jar. The waves rise, the waves fall. Ninkasi, you are the one who soaks the malt in a jar. The waves rise, the waves fall. You are the one who spreads the cooked mash on large reed mats. Coolness overcomes. Ninkasi, you are the one who spreads the cooked mash on large reed mats. Coolness overcomes. You are the one who holds with both hands the great sweet wort, brewing it with honey and wine. Ninkasi, you are the one who holds with both hands the sweet wort to the vessel, brewing it with honey and wine. The filtering vat, which makes a pleasant sound, you place appropriately on a large collector vat. Ninkasi, the filtering vat, which makes a pleasant sound, you place appropriately on the large collector vat. When you pour out the filtered beer of the collector vat, it is like the onrush of Tigris and Euphrates. Ninkasi, you are the one who pours out the filtered beer of the collector vat. It is like the onrush of Tigris and Euphrates. Chapter 8. The Birds and the Bees, Useful Animals for the Stranded Time Traveler. That dog you just domesticated isn't fat. He's just a little husky. Detailed in this section are 18 of the most useful animals on Earth, alongside three notably horrible ones. Each animal on this list predates the evolution of anatomically modern humans, excepting, of course, the animals created by humans, such as dogs and sheep. So the good news is that any civilization with people in it has the potential to have these animals in it too. Before you get too excited by visions of lions plowing your fields while giraffes keep a watchful eye on your herds, You should know that only about 40 different animals were ever fully domesticated before the invention of time travel. And this list includes such obvious filler as goldfish, guppies, canaries, hedgehogs, finches, and skunks. Species that are generally pretty useless to humans outside of being a reasonably adorable pet. Footnote. The complete and alphabetical list of these fully domesticated animals is alpaca, camel, one hump, camel, two hump, canary, cat, chicken, cow, no hump, cow, one hump, dog, donkey, dove, duck, ferret, finch, fox, goat, goldfish, goose, guinea pig, guinea fowl, guppy, hedgehog, honeybee, horse, koi, llama, mouse, pig, pigeon, rabbit, rat, sheep, Siamese fighting fish, silk moth, skunk, turkey, water buffalo, and yak. Of course, this list excludes previously extinct animals that were harvested from the past and domesticated after the invention of time travel, which includes such specimens as the speedy dodo, the eager diprotodon, and the gentle, noble, soulful, deeply compassionate brontosaurus. End of footnote. Unlike plant domestication, comparatively easy, an animal candidate species for domestication must be useful to humans in some way, for example, food, labor, fur, companionship, entertainment, good at dying to let us know when coal mines are filling up with carbon monoxide, just give us something. They must breed in captivity, be easily contained or naturally stay close to humans, reach maturity quickly, tolerate, if not enjoy, the company of both humans and other animals of its species. They must be calm, docile, and not flip out when panicked. They must eat food that's found near humans or that humans can easily provide. And they must accept human presence, human captivity, and ideally, human enlightened civilization-building leadership. If even one of these criteria is absent, your domestication attempt probably isn't going to work, and you'll just end up with a bunch of upset wild animals that now know exactly where you live. However, if all criteria are present, then you will have an animal that will accept being kept by humans and that you can now selectively breed. Like in plant domestication, select individual animals that have the traits you want, encourage them to breed, and continue selecting for your chosen traits with each new generation. That's all it takes, and this process of artificial selection will soon be producing animals more useful to your purposes, whatever you decide your purposes are, than those found in the wild. What animal should you domesticate first? The most important thing your civilization can have is a large, four-legged, easily tamed, easily contained, and easily controlled vegetarian mammal, because such animals are miraculous do-it-all sources of meat, hide, milk, fur, transit, and labor. The best example found across all of human history are horses. They can get you around, pull your plows, feed you, and provide clothing and even entertainment, for example, watching the galloping steeds and then wagering money on the galloping steeds. Footnote. There are, of course, other animals available before humans evolved, but as you need humans to build your civilization, they won't be as much use to you. There are several vegetarian dinosaurs that can be domesticated. Triceratops are especially useful once their horns are bred out, but their advantages are outweighed, in your case, by having to farm them in an era actually populated by ravenous tyrannosaurs. End footnote. If you look around yourself and see horses or proto-horses, henceforth horsies, great news. You and your civilization are playing on easy mode. Footnote. How easy? Large mammals like horses are so great at moving both humans and goods over terrain that they'll remain the gold standard option for land transport all the way until the invention of railroads, and the gold standard option for military transport right up until the invention of trucks and or tanks. Plus, many large mammals can transform vegetables you can't digest, like grasses, into delicious milk that you can, assuming you have the right enzymes, C-section 8.5. The recurring calories these animals provide from milk alone greatly outweigh the one-time calories you get by eating their meat. End footnote. If you don't see any horses, look for substitutes like camels, llamas, and alpacas. Failing that, bison, cows, oxen, and goats don't do everything horses do, but they do at least provide meat, hide, and fur, which is better than nothing. The bad news, both for horsey lovers and temporally stranded civilization builders, is that there are several times and locations throughout human history during which there aren't any horsies or their substitutes available. Two times to watch out for in particular are the Americas between 10,000 BCE and 1492 CE, i.e. after humans first arrived but before extensive European contact, and Australia between 46,000 BCE and 1606 CE, again, after humans first arrived but before extensive European contact. In both these cases, the arrival of humans corresponds with mass extinctions, including horses and the horsey adjacent, which left these continents bereft of useful pack animals until their later reintroduction from Europe. If you're in the Americas between 10,000 BCE and 1492 CE, while there are no horses or camels, there are llamas and alpacas in South America. In North America, there are bison, but they can't be domesticated, and good luck trying to get one to pull a plow. You're the worst off if you're in Central America during this time period, where you won't even have bison. The best you can do while stranded here is domesticate smaller animals, wolves, turkeys, ducks, and try to substitute them as best you can for the larger, more useful beasts that are available to other civilizations elsewhere and elsewhen on the planet. Australia, always a special case since it evolved separately from the rest of the world once it separated from Antarctica around 85 million BCE, is a place where marsupials achieved dominance over other mammals and horses never appeared. Footnote: marsupials, you know, animals that carry their young in a pouch, like kangaroos. End footnote. However, from 2 million BCE until 46,000 BCE, there are diprotodons available to you. These giant, hippo-sized wombats provide meat, milk, hides, can be ridden, will pull a plow, and have been domesticated by other time travelers. End note. Obviously, this can't be verified, as there's no hard evidence to show that diprotodons could be domesticated, and modern wombats, much smaller than diprotodons were, have not been. However, modern wombats live in burrows. It's extremely unlikely the hippo-sized diprotodon did, which makes them difficult to keep in a farming situation, a strike against domestication that the diprotodon didn't share. Wombats are also antisocial animals that generally prefer to be alone, another strike against captivity, while many diprotodon fossils have been discovered in the same location, suggesting that they at least shared migration routes, if not an actual herd. End note. Diprotodons go extinct when humans arrive on the continent, and while kangaroos and emus do survive contact with humanity, neither is well suited for transportation or pulling a plow. As you require humans for your civilization, your best hope for easily building one in Australia is to be stranded around 46,000 BCE, after humans have begun arriving, but before the diprotodon disappears. Protect the diprotodon from humans, and your civilization gets both humans and useful draft animals. Examine the following pages to find animals native to your region. Like in Section 7, Putting Down Roots, each species is listed alphabetically. Species that have been domesticated appear first, and those that haven't appear after. Each includes the area they first evolved in. Depending on your time period, you may get lucky and find instances of these animals, of which only a few are blood parasites, outside their native ranges. End note. Check out 50 Animals That Changed the Course of History by Eric Schlein if you'd like to know more. Not all the species included here are in the text, but the book does include several other animals that influenced human history, just in ways that are less critical to the stranded time traveler. If you didn't know any better, you'd swear that while I was writing this section, which I didn't because this book is clearly from the future, I used Schlein's book as a reference. End note. 8.1. Bison, a.k.a. American buffalo. Native range, North America and Europe. First evolved, 7,500,000 BCE. Domesticated. Water buffaloes were domesticated in 3,000 BCE in India and 2,000 BCE in China, but American buffalo have never been domesticated. Uses. Every part of the buffalo can be used. Meat for eating, hides for clothing, sinews for bowstrings, hooves for glue, see Section 8.9 Horses for the recipe, and bones for fertilizer. If you're throwing out buffalo parts, you're doing it wrong. Notes: bison can get up to speeds of around 55 kilometers an hour, so watch out. If you're in North America after humans show up and there are no horses or camels, you'll still have buffalo, but they'll fight you and won't pull a plow, so maybe just eat them. 8.2. Camels. Native range, the Americas and Africa. First evolved, 50 million BCE for the rabbit-sized camel ancestor in North America, 35 million BCE for the goat-sized ancestor, 20 million BCE for the camel-sized ancestor, and 4 million BCE for modern camels. Domesticated, 3,000 BCE. Uses. Like cows, camels are a good source of milk, meat, hides, and labor. Plus, their dung is dry enough that you can burn it for fuel. You can live on camel milk alone for about a month. We wouldn't recommend it, but it is an option if things are going that way. Two-hump camels are easy to ride. Put the saddle between the humps. But what about one-hump camels? Humans messed around with saddles in front of and behind the hump before realizing around 200 BCE that building a wooden frame around the hump and putting the saddle on top worked best. Camels will tolerate saltier food and water than sheep or cows. Notes. While mostly associated with Arabian deserts today, camels actually evolved in the New World, crossing over to Asia on a land bridge that existed around 4 million BCE. Camels, along with horses, mammoths, mastodons, sloths, and saber-toothed cats, went extinct in the Americas around 10,000 BCE, shortly after humans showed up. This is a coincidence that has absolutely nothing to do with how extremely delicious these animals are. Endnote. My research is less clear on this matter. It could have been humans killing these animals that caused them to go extinct, but it may have also been climate change or these two effects working together. Without a time machine, it's very difficult to tell. But there is a very suspicious global trend throughout the fossil record of giant animals going extinct every single time humans show up. End note. Camels have a wobbly gait, but can carry more than horses, and can go in places horses can't. They're also larger than horses, big enough to spook them in battle. 8.3. Cats. Native range, Eurasia. First evolved, 15 million BCE, for the last common ancestor with tigers and lions, and 7 million BCE for the earliest cat-sized wildcats. Domesticated in 7,500 BCE, if cats can even be said to be domesticated. Uses. Cats are useful for killing vermin, like mice and rats, but beyond that, they provide very little use to humans, except companionship, and even then only according to their capricious whims. Cats can be considered to be only semi-domesticated. Domestication usually involves changes between domesticated and wild specimens, and wild and domestic cats show very few genetic differences. Notes. Cats, like dogs, may also have been self-domesticating. As soon as humans started keeping grain around, it would attract mice and rats, which would attract the wild cats that hunt them. As cats provided a useful service and asked for very little in return, they could enter the fabric of human society easily. During the Black Death in Europe, 1346 to 1353 CE, 50% of the human population there died, stay away if you can, cats were thought to carry the disease, and they were slaughtered en masse in an attempt to end the plague. Ironically, fleas carried on the rats were one of the major disease vectors, and with no cats, the rat population exploded. Again, stay the heck away from Europe from 1346 to 1353 CE. Maybe even 1354, just to be safe. 8.4. Chickens. Native range, India and Southeast Asia. First evolved, 3,600,000 BCE for the common ancestor between chickens and pheasants. Domesticated, 6,000 BCE. Uses. Chickens are a delicious source of both meat and eggs. Plus, they're omnivorous, which makes them easier to feed than cows. To answer your question, the egg came first, as eggs evolved in other animals millions of years before chickens ever appeared. To answer your second, newly clarified question, the chicken egg also came first. Inside the first chicken egg was a zygote carrying a mutation that allowed it to become the first chicken. This egg, with the mutated zygote inside, was therefore laid by a proto-chicken. Evolution. Aristotle wasted a lot of time pondering this problem around 350 BCE and ended up concluding that both chickens and eggs must have always existed as two eternal constants in the cosmos. See, these are the kinds of conclusions you reach when you don't know that evolution is a thing. Notes. After first being domesticated around 6,000 BCE in China, they reached Eastern Europe around 3,000 BCE, possibly through another domestication, the Middle East around 2,000 BCE, Egypt around 1,400 BCE, and Western Europe and Africa around 1,000 BCE. They were brought to the Americas with European contact. Chicken eggs are an extremely versatile ingredient in cooking and baking. The proteins in eggs solidify when cooked, which makes them very useful as binding agents in all sorts of foods, including the delicious hamburgers you will no doubt one day want your civilization to produce. Eggs are also used to add moisture, to thicken sauces, to leaven, to emulsify, as a glaze, and as a way to purify liquids. See section 10.2.6. 8.5. Cows. Native range, India, Turkey, and Europe. First evolved, 2 million BCE, for aurochs. Domesticated, 8500 BCE. Uses. One of the most useful animals to humanity, cows can be seen as machines that turn indigestible to humans materials like grasses into delicious meat, refreshing.